Welcome to another exciting episode of Live the Adventure Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Live the Adventure Radio. I am Michael Faust, and I am sitting here with Aaron Follin of Heirloom Audio. Good afternoon, Aaron.
Good afternoon, Michael. It's great to be on another episode of this wonderful podcast.
Today we're covering 7 days. Of course, we're looking at October the 16th, Sunday, through October the 22nd, a Saturday. Let's go ahead and get started. October the 16th, Sunday, October the 16th. This is the anniversary of Marie Antoinette's beheading.
She was starting it out with some light content for you all here.
Yes, she was the Queen of France for about 18 years. She was killed during the French Revolution. This is a really an interesting and amazing time in French history that still is impacting the world today. Let me read a couple of things here for you. I'm reading here from history.com. One thing that Marie Antoinette is remembered for is saying, "Let them eat cake." And let me kind of set that up for you here. It says, the daughter of the Holy Roman Emperor Francis I, she married Louis in 1770 to strengthen the French-Austrian alliance. At a time of economic turmoil in France, she lived extravagantly and encouraged her husband to resist reform of the monarchy. In one episode, she allegedly responded to news that the French peasantry had no bread to eat by callously replying, "Let them eat cake." The increasing revolutionary uproar convinced the king and queen to attempt to escape to Austria in 1791, but of course they didn't. It wasn't successful. They were captured by revolutionary forces and carried back to Paris. And in 1792, the French monarchy was abolished, and Louis and Marie Antoinette were condemned for treason. And in 1793, on this date, she was beheaded. Aaron, you have a little news to tell us about. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we do indeed have a new production coming out here probably in the next month or two before Christmas called In the Reign of Terror. And it revolves around this story that Marie Antoinette is involved in. She's not really a featured aspect of it, but the downfall of the monarchy is talked about. Basically, it's about a really well-to-do family who takes in a young British boy and teaches him the way of the French. And then, boom, the French Revolution happens. The family is broken apart. Mm-hmm. And the story is basically about this young boy as he makes his way back to England and does his best to keep the family he was with together. So awesome. It's a great, great story. That is, I just heard actually the final cut of it before it heads off to duplication, and it sounds really, really good, and it's a great story, and I'm excited to share. And Marie Antoinette, I think, is a, from what I hear, a bit misunderstood. I know executive producer Bill Hyde actually has heard some wonderful things about her and her involvement with charities, and apparently there is some misunderstanding regarding the way she's been painted. Now, obviously, it's a little hard when you see both sides, but Bill is actually quite impressed by Marie's. He's read a couple biographies about her. Really interesting story, a little dark. I mean, it's a lot of killing happened during the French Revolution.
As Paul Harvey would say, that's the rest of the story.
Right.
So we'll have to get Bill to tell that to us sometime. Let's go to October the 17th. October 17th, this is one that I think a lot of people will find maybe amazing and encouraging all at the same time. Ignatius of Antioch faces wild beast, and he was killed. This was back in 107. There are two Ignatiuses of history, church history. One is Ignatius of Antioch. The other is Ignatius of Loyola. We're talking today about Ignatius of Antioch. He's one of the church fathers. That's a group of men that church historians reference as the church fathers. Ignatius was bishop of Antioch for 40 years, probably from A.D. 67 to A.D. 106, and he became a martyr. Most likely, he studied under the Apostle John. Get this. I think this is the most amazing part of this story. He wrote letters. He was captured, I believe. I forget where he was captured, but he was captured and brought back to Rome. And as he was heading back there, Ignatius says, I'm reading here from Christianity.com. It says, Ignatius' convoy moved so slowly that a messenger going ahead had time to get there before him. He pleaded with Rome's Christians not to try to save him. So in other words, some Christians were trying to save Ignatius, and he's saying, no, don't save me. And this is an exact quote, direct quote from him. He says, nearness to the sword is nearness to God. To be among the wild beast is to be in the arms of God. Only let it be in the name of Jesus Christ. I endure all things that I may suffer together with him, since he who became perfect man strengthens me. And on this day in 107, on October the 7th, back in 107, tradition tells us that Ignatius died at the hands of wild beasts. I also want to just toss in here, there's a really good book, if there's any homeschool moms or just anybody out there wanting to get a good book about church history and Christian history, the one that my favorite is called Church History in Plain Language. Church History in Plain Language. You can get it off of Amazon or any other book website. It's a good book that gives you concise account of church history. I don't know what you have to say about that, Aaron, but sometimes I ask myself, would we have the courage to do what the martyrs did, to do what people like Ignatius did, to have the courage to face death when, you know, Ignatius could have denied Christ probably. And
got out of it. Yeah, and I think just the example that he sets for all of us, you know, James chapter 1 talks about considering it pure joy whenever we face trials, because we know that the testing of our faith produces perseverance. You know, he had the opportunity to be rescued from what it sounds like, and refused because he knew... taking a stand like he was about to do would really make more of an impact than if he was rescued.
To get more specifics here, it says, he hustled to the arena, was thrown to two fierce lions who immediately devoured him. One other point I was wanting to make about this, think about it, you know, the verse you read, though, there. I mean, think about if Ignatius had denied Christ. We wouldn't even know about it.
Nope.
He would just be another person in history who lived and who went on and did a few things that might have been important during the day, but we don't remember anymore. Let's move on to October the 18th. October the 18th, on this day, Thomas Edison died. Thomas Edison died on October the 18th. I'm going to read here from history.com. It says, in his 84 years, Thomas Edison acquired a record number of patents, a total of 1,093, and was the driving force behind such inventions as the phonograph, the incandescent light bulb, and one of the earliest motion picture cameras. He also created the world's first industrial research laboratory. One thing to consider here, Aaron, as you and I were discussing before we started recording here, is something to just, I think, for homeschool families that are, you know, probably really, who think more about this issue than I think most Americans and most people do, is every invention profitable and beneficial? Is every invention profitable and beneficial, especially spiritually? Mm-hmm. Now, yes, the light bulb, we'll all say, is profitable.
Quite helpful.
It's great. It's quite helpful. We're sitting here with light around us right now as we record this. But I do think that, you know, when studying someone like Edison, these are just basic inventions. And yes, we've benefited from light. But if we go to the modern day and look at some of the inventions around us right now, like the smartphone, I mean, has that been fully beneficial and profitable spiritually? Can we really look at every modern invention and say that we are closer to Christ because of it? What are your thoughts on that, Aaron?
Well, I would definitely have to agree with you that, you know, many of the inventions we enjoy could be defined, I guess, as kind of a double-edged sword, because many things come as pros and cons. You know, it depends how you use a computer or your television or You know, we see good examples and bad examples of how we are using technology. I think God has certainly given great minds like Edison to help advance that technology and to improve living conditions and all these kind of things. So in one way, it's a huge blessing. But yeah, when you talk about the smartphone, you think about how mm-hmm. how much of a distraction it can be, where you walk on a college campus now mm-hmm. and you see no one looks up and mm-hmm. greets each other. No one, yep. they are literally, it's like mm-hmm. glued to their phone.
You go to a coffee shop.
Yeah, people exactly.
are sitting there.
You see people on
table.
Dates, yeah. husbands and wives, mm-hmm. just looking down the entire meal.
They're checking on their kids, though.
Oh, that's possible, yeah.
They're texting the babysitter.
So I guess, yeah, just an encouragement to all of our listeners to really, you know, obviously, technology is a wonderful thing. But mm-hmm. you do have to be careful how it's used, because it can easily be abused.
I think the Amish are actually onto something here. I've been to Amish country in Pennsylvania twice, and it's incredible. I would simply say that they live a life that is simpler, and you know, we can debate the theology and all of that, but a simpler life is more enjoyable. And that's mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. We live our whole lives, and people talk about what? Retirement. Mm-hmm. Why do they want to retire? Because they want to live a simpler life.
Right.
And so we shouldn't pretend that every invention is you know, is actually progressing us in every facet of life. It might be progressing us and helping us do something simpler, but we're simply replacing that time with something else often. Let's move over to October the 19th. October 19th, this is a really big day. Mm-hmm. Victory at Gorktown. We're talking about the Revolutionary War, late 1700s. On this day in the late 1700s, the Revolutionary War essentially was over. I'm reading here again from history.com. It says, hopelessly trapped at Yorktown, Virginia, British General Lord Cornwallis surrenders 8,000 British soldiers and seamen to a larger Franco-American force, effectively bringing an end to the American Revolution. And I think the one thing to mention here is the fact that the French helped us win that war. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of historians would argue that without France, you know, American would not have won the Revolutionary War. And it's kind of funny when you think about that, because oftentimes when it comes to matters of war and peace, Americans tend to make fun of the French. But we do need to at least acknowledge that without those guys, we might not even have an America today.
Yeah, and it's a really fascinating, I mean, you know, encourage you to look into this yourself, because this is such a monumental, this really ended the American Revolution. This really proved that the colonists were ready and capable to run this country and to protect the citizens within. And the way that this battle, you know, there were some interesting tactics involved, you know, where Cornwallis was convinced they were going to be elsewhere, and a large portion of their troops went elsewhere, and then Washington came down. The American forces had around 20,000, and then, as Michael said, the British only had 8,000, so it was really a sound victory. So I encourage you to read more about it. There's some really interesting mm-hmm. Stuff in the way that we went about doing and getting that victory.
I failed to mention the year was 1781. I also like to mention resources as we record these. Now we're talking before we recorded. There's a really good resource that I enjoy showing to my kids. My kids are 8, 4, 4, and 1, and especially the 8-year-old. I've shown him, there's a series of Charlie Brown episodes that were made in the 80s. It's called Charlie Brown, This is America, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have one about the Revolutionary War, but they do have one about inventors, and one of the inventors that they talk about in that cartoon is Thomas Edison. My kids actually watch those sometimes as we're going down the road on a 7-hour trip across the country, so those are helpful. And we also listen to, of course, Heirloom Audio CDs.
Of course.
Heirloom Audio presents the story of a young man...
We must be ready.
...who takes on the mightiest government in the world.
Beric! They are here!
Who? The Romans!
And discovers someone he never expected.
Have you heard the teachings of a man named Christus?
It's Beric the Briton on The Extraordinary Adventures of G.A. Hinty.
Follow me, men! To the wall!
Featuring Kathy Sarah from Downton Abbey, Honeysuckle Weeks from Foyle's War, and John Rhys-Davies from The Lord of the Rings.
Citizens of Rome, Emperor Nero!
Starring Tom Baker from Doctor Who, and Emmy Award winner Brian Cox from Braveheart, and The Bourne Identity.
I will grant you the desire of your heart. You shall meet your God.
Live the adventure with Beric the Briton. Go to BericTheBriton.com. That's BericTheBriton.com.
Let's go ahead and look at October the 20th. October the 20th. Let's bump down to the Louisiana Purchase, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1803, this is called, you know, the greatest real estate deal in the history of the world. And you can argue that it probably was, at least in American history. I'm reading here from Monticello.org. Monticello, of course, is the home of Thomas Jefferson. The Louisiana Purchase took place under the presidency of Thomas Jefferson. And it says here that the Louisiana Purchase was a land deal between the United States and France in which the U.S. acquired approximately 827,000 square miles of land west of the Mississippi River for $15 million. And I should also note that the date that we're talking about here, October the 20th, is the date that the U.S. Senate ratified the Louisiana Purchase. Just an incredible moment in American history. This, of course, set up so many things. It set up the Lewis and Clark Expedition years later that I've always found fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading here from history.com. What was known as the Louisiana Territory stretched from the Mississippi River in the east to the Rocky Mountains in the west and from the Gulf of Mexico in the south to the Canadian border in the north. So it's like a huge swath in the middle of the country. Part or all of 15 states were eventually created from the land deal, which is considered one of the more important achievements of Thomas Jefferson's presidency. I also like this, but anybody who's a business person will appreciate this as well. Jefferson originally offered $2 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was rejected. And eventually he and the French settled on a deal of $15 million. This, of course, was done so that the French needed money. The French were in war at the time. And Napoleon was needing some money, and so that was the point. That's why France wanted to sell that as well. Let's skip on down to October 21st. We have a couple more here. I think the one on 22nd is one that the homeschoolers in our audience are really going to want to hear about. But let's go to October the 21st. October 21st, thousands protest the war in Vietnam. In Washington, D.C., I'm reading from history.com again. In Washington, D.C., nearly 100,000 people gather to protest the American war effort in Vietnam. More than 50,000 other protesters march to the Pentagon to ask for an end to the conflict. The protest that was the most dramatic sign of waning U.S. support for President Lyndon Johnson's war in Vietnam. Polls taken in the summer of 1967, revealed that for the first time, American support for the war had fallen below 50%. I don't know if you have anything to add to that moment in history, Aaron, but it does show a lot of things. At the time, Christians were divided over if the Vietnam War was a just war.
Mm-hmm.
The political parties were debating that as well. The roles are actually reversed. You have the Democratic Party, who oftentimes is, the party of doves, actually, leading the charge for that war. So there was a lot of interesting dynamics going on there in the late 60s. Do you have anything to add to that before we move on to the next one?
Well, no, and it's a really tough thing because I think there's multiple facets to it. One is, yes, should we have gone to war? I wasn't alive at the time. I'm not not aware of all of the circumstances surrounding it, but I do know that from hearing what I've heard about it, you know, probably not. And, you know, you can argue that, I'm sure there's multiple sides to that argument and to that question. However, I do know that one of the biggest unfortunate realities of the war is the way the armed forces were viewed and treated upon their return.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think, you know,
horrible.
Regardless of the politics behind it, these men and women were doing what they were told,
mm-hmm.
and were doing their best to, you know, do what they thought was the right thing to do, in protection of our country. So, I think, you know, the way they were treated and viewed upon their return is really, really sad. And, you know, we really do need to thank and support those who really, are putting their lives on the line.
Yeah. Then and now.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things to talk about. Johnson was criticized for micromanaging the war from the White House. It was a war that was going to be difficult to win anyway, because it was kind of a guerrilla war, a jungle mm-hmm. war. So a lot of the tactics that we had used in previous wars, you know, did not work as well. And, we could go on and on about that, because there was some concern at the end of World War II, I believe, if I remember correctly, that the Japanese would go into the jungles and prolong the war. But thankfully, that did not happen. Let's move on to a different line of history here. October the 22nd, a really important date in church history and Christian history. It took place in the 1800s, and that dealt with a man by the name of William Miller setting the wrong date for the return of Christ. Now, some of you might be thinking, what do you mean setting the wrong date? You're not even supposed to set a date at all. Well, this man did, and a really important man. William Miller, it says, I'm reading here again from Christianity.com. William Miller gained a large following predicting that Christ would return on this day, October the 22nd, 1844. You can probably imagine that he gained a lot of followers, and he did. As many as 100,000 people mm-hmm. gathered across the country at the predicted time in makeshift temples and on hillsides to meet their bridegroom, Christ. It says here, a man by the name of Maxwell Pearson Gaddis attended one of these rallies and reported the result. When midnight came and Christ had not returned, people grew restless. Some walked out. One person said allowance must be made for differences of latitude and longitude between Palestine and the U.S., meaning that perhaps, you know, we had it a little bit off or a few hours off. At about 1 o'clock, one of the leaders rose and said, I never did fix upon the precise time myself, and I always told my brethren they would get into trouble if they did, but they would not listen to me. They followed their leaders. I believe the most important thing about all of this is to be ready. In other words, this person is saying the time is not important. We should just be ready always for the return of Christ. And I think that person was right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the final paragraph that I'm going to read. Humiliated by what has been called the great disappointment, some Millerites shut their faith completely. Led by Miller, others formed the Adventists. That's the Seventh-day Adventist. Mm-hmm. The majority returned to more traditional churches. And I think that story, you know, this is not about Seventh-day Adventism. This is simply about setting the date for Christ's return. But we need to be careful there, mm-hmm. you know, because I have a lot of friends who read the Left Behind series, and I think the Left Behind series is within the mainstream of evangelical thought. But somebody, you know, there are some people who get so into that mm-hmm. they do come pretty close to setting that date. So what are your thoughts on that?
And many, many people have, you know, people write books mm-hmm. Or people set 3 or 4 dates during their lifetime. Oh, it didn't happen this time. Well, here it is. This is definitely it. And, you know, they gain a following every single time. And I think that really does speak to the fact that people are eager for it, you know, and eager and ready and looking forward to it, which is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to, you know, remember, for example, in Matthew 24, it talks about in verse 36, no one knows the day or the hour, mm-hmm. not even the angels in heaven, mm-hmm. nor the Son of God. Not even Jesus Christ knows, mm-hmm. but only the Father. God the Father is the mm-hmm. only one who knows mm-hmm. The time of his return. And so I think it's just important to, A, yes, really look forward to it, and, mm-hmm. and to live your life in light of his return. You mm-hmm. know, I remember my parents multiple times saying, Aaron, you know, when thinking about, should I do this or should I do this? You know, mm-hmm. what do you want to be doing when the Lord returns? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you want him to observe you mm-hmm. doing? And I think that's a wonderful thing to keep in mind as we go throughout life. So look forward to it, but trust in the fact that we don't know when it's going to be. So we better be ready at any time. And when we hear people set dates like this,
yeah,
you can really just confidently shake your head and know that that's not the case.
It's probably not the one. Yeah, it's probably not the one. Yeah, we should be waiting expectantly. You know, you can go to the opposite end of the spectrum here and not even be thinking about it. Right. And that's the opposite of what William Miller did. And that's also wrong as well. We need to keep in mind how this impacts people, how this impacted the people in that time who were expecting it, who may have turned away from their faith because of it, and how did it impact, you know, the non-Christians around them who were watching them and probably a little laughing.
Mm-hmm.
These were the people of Noah's day who, you know, didn't live to see the ark. They, you know, the people of Noah's day saw the ark. But what if the ark, what if the flood hadn't happened? That's what happened here in William Miller's day. He was saying something incredible was going to happen, and it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we need to keep in mind. How is this going to impact a dying world, and how is this going to impact people within the church? Well, Aaron, that concludes another week of Live the Adventure Radio. I always enjoy looking at dates in history and mm-hmm. talking about them.
Yep.
Let's do it again next week.
Sounds good. I'll be here.
All right. For with Aaron Fullen, this has been Michael Faust. Join us again next week for Live the Adventure Radio.